We're doing Parshas Miketz. In a nutshell, our Parsha will outline how Pharaoh has a dream. Yosef interprets the dream. He's appointed king. He gets married. He has two children. He amasses the wealth of Egypt. And then when the years of famine come, his brothers come to Egypt. He blames them that they are spies. They deny it. He says, okay, I'm holding Shimon in captivity. Bring me down Benjamin. You'll prove to me you aren't spies. And when they bring back Benjamin, he entertains them. And when they leave, he has his servants hide his goblet in Benjamin's sack. And after they've left the city, they charge with all the troops after them. And they say, thieves, how could you do this to us? And they discover, so to speak, they discover the goblet in Benjamin's sack. And the brothers don't know what to do. And they're brought back to Yosef's palace in shame, as they've been caught as thieves, and now technically Benjamin should get the death penalty and the rest of them should be enslaved. And that's our parsha in a nutshell. So now let's begin our parsha and see what's going on. In the end of last week's parsha, Yosef interprets for the butler, he interprets his dream that in 3 days Pharaoh will celebrate his birthday, and then the butler will be exonerated, he will be reinstated to his post. And Yosef tells him, but please remember me when you go out, because I've been in this dungeon, it's 8 years already, and if you could only remember me, that's my only hope of getting out of here. And in heaven they look down at Yosef and they say, that's your only hope? Why do you word it that way? Yosef, until now you've been confident that Hashem's taking care of you. Every day Yosef was in prison, Potiphar's wife would come visit him and say, be with me. And Yosef refused. And she'd say, I'm going to have your eyes gorged out. And he'd say, God is the one that gives sight. And she'd say, I'm going to put you in shackles. And he'd say, God is the one that frees people from shackles. Every day she tried to seduce him. For years he's there in the dungeon and she visits him day after day, because after Potiphar was castrated, he became Kohenon, so he became very religious. He's got, what else is he going to do now with his life? He became celibate, right? He's castrated. So Potiphar becomes an important priest in the city of On. So Potiphar's wife comes day after day and she doesn't leave Yosef alone, and he has such faith in Hashem. He says, Hashem will control when I get out of here. But then in that moment where he interpreted the dream well for the butler, and now the butler's getting out, so Yosef sees that, and he tells him, but please remember me in 3 days when you get out. Make sure to mention me to Pharaoh. Don't forget me. Our sages say, had Yosef not said it that way, had he not said, I have no hope but you, in heaven it was decreed that 3 days later he was also supposed to be exonerated. When Pharaoh's birthday came and he was going to review the records, so Yosef was supposed to be exonerated, because when the judges looked at the case of Potiphar's wife, the judges actually said, let's analyze Yosef's cloak. She's saying that he was attacking her, right? So then she was pushing him away by his cloak, by his robe, and he was making advances at her, right? So then the front of the coat should be torn. His version of the story is that he was trying to run away and she was pulling the coat towards him. So then the back of the coat should be torn because he's pulling his neck against the back. They analyze the garment and they see that the back of the coat is frayed. So they say, we're sorry, Potiphar, but the servant's telling the truth. Your wife's the liar. So Potiphar doesn't know what to do with himself. What's he going to do? Tell everyone, you know, my wife's a liar? So he gives Yosef the first class prison, the king's prison, the king's detention center, where he puts his servants that need to be examined. He gives Yosef first class service. He puts him in a dungeon, but it's the best dungeon of the class. And even though everyone hates Hebrews, Yosef is faithful to Hashem, and he sees that it always gets him out of trouble. He's faithful to Hashem in Potiphar's house, and he's always found favor in everyone's eyes. He's faithful to Hashem in the dungeon, and everyone likes him. Even the jailer gives him the keys. He's in charge of everyone. And now he's been faithful to this butler, and instead of being freed 3 days later when he should have been, he's going to spend another 2 years in jail. So now it's going to be a decade. He's going to be in jail, down in this dungeon. As far as he knows, no one knows he's alive. His father hasn't come searching for him. After spending 3 days in the pit, when the brothers tore off his clothing and threw him into that pit, 3 days he was in that pit. And now he's spending these decade in the dungeon. And now those 2 years, ever since the butler gets out of jail, 2 years pass and Pharaoh has a dream. And in his dream, he's standing on the Nile because Pharaoh used to declare that he's master of the Nile. He said he created himself. He created the Nile. He's a self-made man, literally. And he sees out of the Nile come out seven cows. Seven cows. And they're so good looking. And they're grazing. And another seven cows come out of the Nile. And they look so bad. They're emaciated. And they consume the healthy cows. Now that's unnatural. Cows are herbivores. They don't eat meat. So they consume them. And Pharaoh awakens. And then he goes back to sleep. And he has another dream, and he sees seven stalks that are full, and another thin stalks grow after them, and they cover them up, which is unnatural. Thin stalks can't cover fat stalks. They cover up the fat stalks. And Pharaoh awakens, and he can't figure out what the dream means, so he calls in all his advisors, and he tells them the dream, and he always leaves out some details from the dream. And he wants to hear how they'll interpret it. So they tell him, you're going to marry seven wives, you're going to bury seven wives, the cows represent your wives, you're going to fight seven wars, you're going to lose seven wars, the cows represent wars, you're going to have seven daughters, you're going to bury seven daughters, yeah, all kinds of interpretations. They keep getting it wrong. And then Pharaoh makes a decree, anyone who knows the dream interpreter must tell me. And the butler's all nervous, he might be caught that he knew about Joseph. So he runs in and he says, look, I'm very embarrassed, I have two things that I did wrong. Number one is, that you remember back then, there was a fly in your wine. I'm embarrassed about it till today. And number two is, well, there was. Now, he's about to describe Yosef, and he's very worried because Yosef is so smart, he might end up in a position high up there after the story, and then he might take revenge from the butler. So he wants to ensure that Yosef doesn't get any good out of this. So he starts speaking about Yosef, and he says, he was a Hebrew. You know those Hebrews we can't stand. And he's not too smart. He's a lad, and he doesn't talk our language. But you know what? He interpreted my dreams. Now, Yosef's been spending a decade in the dungeon. And the night before, the angel Gabriel came to Yosef and taught him all 70 languages. Now, when we read this, so the simple reading of the Gemara in Sota is that the angel came and taught him all 70 languages. But when the Talmud tells us that, sometimes we have to understand what the Talmud's saying. It could be what the Talmud means is that Hashem ensured that in his time in prison, he would learn all these languages. The Talmud says the angel came and taught him. So the simple reading of the Talmud is, yeah, he went to sleep at night. He did not know any of these languages. He woke up in the morning. He knew all of them. But it could be that the Talmud also meant that by Hashem ensured that during his time in prison, he would learn all these languages. He did have 10 years down there. And he comes out and they give him a haircut. And they shower him, and they put him in royal clothing, and they rush him out to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh tells him, I have a dream, no one can interpret it, and I heard about you, that you just hear dreams, you interpret them right away. And Yosef makes the risk of his life, and he says, no, not me. God is going to answer you. If Hashem chooses to give me the answer, then it's Hashem who gives the answer. So, Yosef, you have the opportunity of your life. 2 years ago, you begged the butler to say a good word about you to Pharaoh. Now you're meeting Pharaoh, and the first thing you tell Pharaoh is, you're wrong? That's what you tell a king? The king tells you, I hear you're brilliant. So Yosef should have said, well, I'm not sure what I should say, but I'm willing to give it a shot. No! Yosef is such a God-fearing person. Yosef will not stand for a second to take credit for that which is not his. See, even though this is his first sentence before Pharaoh, he risks being beheaded. Pharaoh could tell him, what, you just told me I'm wrong? But when people see a person who's really God-fearing, a person who isn't playing games, who honestly is saying, Hashem's in control, it's not me, they have to respect it. And Pharaoh respects it, as we will see. In the whole game that Yosef's going to play with the brothers, he's going to make believe many things. There's one thing he will never play games with. He will constantly say, "Et Elokim ani yarei." You know, I have respect for God. I have to play this the way Hashem wants it. That's one thing he can't cover up. He won't play games about that. So Pharaoh tells him the dream. And when Pharaoh tells him the dream again, he omits certain details and Yosef fills it in. And suddenly when Yosef interprets the dream, Yosef tells him, look, you woke up in the middle to tell you that you have a responsibility to wake up over here and take care of the problem. You were informed that the dream you saw double to tell you it's happening right away. You're going to have 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. Well, they had 7 years of plenty. They were supposed to have 14 years of famine. That's why they had a double dream. But Yosef chooses to interpret it in a better way. He interprets it as though there are only going to be 7 years of famine. In fact, there will not be 7 years of famine. After 2 years of famine, the famine will end. So Yosef's interpretation is not going to come out true. When Yaakov descends to Egypt, then the famine ends. So technically, but by that time, everyone's convinced Yosef's the viceroy. No one's challenging that. So Yosef interprets a dream. He tells him, he says, you have to, God has told you what he's doing in the world. And now you as the king have to appoint someone smart to prepare. That's why you woke up in between dreams, to tell you have to wake up and take care of things and gather all the food into storage houses and be prepared so you have the food for the 7 years of famine. The earth shouldn't be destroyed over this famine. And Pharaoh tells them, have you ever seen someone like this? Pharaoh tells Yosef, Acharei hodi Elokim otchat kol zot. Our sages say, Acharai. Pharaoh was saying, you must have been standing behind me in that dream. Where were you? I didn't see you, but you're telling it over as though you were there. So if you know all this, I want you in charge of everything. Just remember, I'm the boss. Now, when Yosef came to meet Pharaoh, Pharaoh sat on a throne that had 70 steps, and you'd always walk up a step based on the language you knew. And every time, the king would greet you in a language, and you'd have to talk to him in that language. So Pharaoh knew 69 languages. He didn't know Hebrew. So when Yosef comes up, he's walking up the steps, and finally he reaches the step of Hebrew. And Pharaoh can't fake it, because Yosef really knows Hebrew. So Pharaoh takes Yosef to a side room, and he says, look, I'm appointing you boss here, but promise me you will never reveal to anyone that you know Hebrew and I don't, because technically then you could be king and I can't. So promise me you'll never give that over. So Yosef makes a promise, he'll never tell. Pharaoh gives him his ring. Remember, we're going to see this in the story of Esther as well. And he dresses Yosef in royal clothing, as we will see will happen to Mordechai later on as well. And he sets up a special... Okay. He gives Yosef a chariot, and he takes him for a ride around the capital to appoint him as the new prince. And he changes his name, which is a sign of ownership. When you change someone's name, that's a sign that you own them. And he gives him the name Tzofnat Paneach. He reveals secrets. And then, so there are two versions to the story. The simple version of the story is that Pharaoh summons in Potiphar, and he says, look, you know and I know that Yosef is innocent, but we're going to prove it to the world. You're going to let Yosef marry your daughter. And that will show everyone that Yosef did nothing wrong with your wife. In fact, we said Potiphar was castrated. He didn't have a daughter. Who's this girl that's brought up by Potiphar? So when Dina gave birth to a child, the brothers were very upset. They didn't want to have Shechem's daughter growing up in their house. So Yaakov was concerned that they just killed the whole city behind his back. He can't know what they're going to do to the daughter of Shechem behind his back. So Yaakov takes her down to Egypt, and he looks for adoptive parents. He wants to ensure no one's going to touch her. And he finds Potiphar, who is the chief executioner for Pharaoh. So no one's going to touch the girl by him. And Potiphar's wife is actually a very pious woman. And Potiphar's wife had a vision that Mashiach is supposed to come from her. Little did she know that Mashiach was supposed to come from her adopted daughter. When a person adopts a child, it's as though they gave birth to them. When someone brings up a child. So she's going to adopt this girl named Osnat. Now, Osnat is an extraordinarily pious young woman. And Yosef is serving in the same house that she's growing up. Now, when Yosef is riding around in the chariot, everyone throws jewelry at her. And Osnat has this locket that tells her whole story. Yaakov Avinu gave her a locket so that one day she'll open it up and read her whole story and come back to Yaakov. He always had to worry that maybe Potiphar won't tell her the truth. Maybe Potiphar will tell her he's her father. So he gives her this locket. Inside is the story. So she hasn't yet opened that locket. She sees Yosef. She throws it down at him. It lands on his lap. He sees a locket. The locket has Hebrew inscriptions on it. That's weird. He opens it up. He reads the whole story. He tells the chariot, stop. Where's the girl who threw this locket? And then he discovers it's Osnat. So that's the other version of the story, that's how he found Osnat, and that's what the verse is. Banot tzada leshur. Girls were dancing on the walls in honor of Yosef as this handsome young man was taken for a ride around town. All the girls were squealing and yelling and dancing on the walls for him. So he marries Osnat, the one Jewish girl in Egypt. He marries her, and he has Jewish children from her. So Yosef takes control of the city, and he tells all the people, there's a famine coming, you guys have to store your food. There's going to be a famine here. So for 7 years, he keeps sending out warning signs, he keeps sending out articles telling people they have to store up on grains and wheat. And everyone listens, and they start making storage houses, and Yosef sets up storage houses, and he amasses a huge amount of food. Now he develops a whole science about how you store food to ensure it doesn't rot. So he develops this fantastic science, and he's brilliant. He sets up storage houses, and he sets up a whole system. And then, after he's had two children, the famine strikes. And from here we learn that during the years of famine, a person has to feel like he's part of the crowd, and he should not be with his wife. People separate their beds during a famine when there's a time of sorrow for the Jewish people or for the world at large or for one's community. One partakes of that sorrow. We can't take questions, we're too short on time, unless it's really quick. Ephraim means to be fruitful, like pre. Hashem has made me fruitful in spite of the fact that I've been in this land of affliction. So Yosef's gone through quite a lot since he was 17 years old. So the famine strikes, and the Egyptians go to their storage houses. Yosef warned of this famine, and they find that everything's rotted away. Nothing is there. So they come to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, go to Yosef. They come to Yosef. Yosef says, you all have to circumcise. Now, circumcision helps a person take control of his more base desires, and the Egyptians had a real problem with that. So they come back to Pharaoh, and they say, Pharaoh, give us food. Pharaoh says, go to Yosef. They say, we did. He says, and what did Yosef tell you? They said, Yosef says, circumcise. So Pharaoh said, then circumcise. So they say, we don't want to. So Pharaoh says, fine, so don't go to Yosef. So then you have no food. So they say, yeah, but we need food. So Pharaoh says, but Yosef warned you for 7 years. What did you do during those 7 years? So they say, we stored food and it all rotted. So Pharaoh says, gee, if Yosef made a decree that everyone's food should rot, and you see his decree came true, next thing you know, he might say you should all drop dead, and you might all drop dead. So I recommend you listen to him and all circumcise. But you don't come to me, you go to Yosef. You see, his grain lasted, and yours didn't. So he's some serious sorcerer, this Yosef. You better listen to him. So they have no choice. So all of Egypt circumcises. And that's a phenomenal thing, because the last city to circumcise found themselves dead, right? So very interesting. So Yaakov has had this long period of 13 years where Hashem hasn't spoken to him. And this is so that Yaakov won't be aware of what's going on. Yaakov's had this period of mourning. And now Hashem is going to give him a slight Ruach HaKodesh. There's going to be a spark. And Yaakov will be at home. His sons will be out in the marketplace looking for food. They're going to come home and Yaakov will say, gee, I hear there's food in Egypt. And they'll look at him and say, how do you know? So suddenly he has a spark of Ruach HaKodesh. This is part of Hashem's plan to bring the Jews down to Egypt. He says, why should we look different? Everyone else has no food. So we have a little bit of food left. Why should we stand out? Go down to Egypt. And the brothers are all thinking to one another, for 10 years we've been wanting to do tshuva. For 10 years we've been thinking about this. Now we're going down, we're going to bring Yosef back. For any price, we're bringing him back. And they store their money, and they decide they're going down. And Yaakov sends them down as 10, because 10 people couldn't withstand the decree from heaven, just as we find in the city of Sodom and Amorah. 10 represent the whole Jewish people. And they go down. And Yaakov refuses to send Benjamin, Binyamin. He says, look, in our family, everyone dies en route. Rachel, his mother, died en route. Yosef, his brother, died en route. So their mazel isn't so good when they're en route. I'm not sending Benjamin. And from here we learn the idea that when a person's traveling, when a person's in a situation of danger, so then even if he might not have deserved to be punished, the danger itself is dangerous. don't assume that it's not dangerous. There is such a concept as a dangerous situation, and then a person can be hurt even though he might not have deserved it otherwise. And we discussed how this works. The idea that a person gets judged all over again when he's in a dangerous situation, and in heaven they say, does he have the merits to make it out alive? Whereas if a person was walking normally, no one judges him in heaven. He's living his basic life, and that's fine. But they start having exacting judgment when a person does something dangerous, like, we said a person takes medication in the dark. He doesn't know what he's taking. So in heaven they say, does he deserve to get it right? Or does he deserve, we won't get involved, let nature take its course. So Yosef makes a rule in Egypt. Rule number one is that the prices are steady. He doesn't want inflation. He says, steady prices, advertise in all the countries what our prices are. Rule number two is you could only take food for your families. Because Yosef wants to ensure that people don't set up trades of Egyptian food and take advantage of it. So you could only take for your family. Rule number three, you have to come. No sending slaves to Egypt. The heads of the family have to come down to Egypt. He wants to meet his brothers. So strategically, this makes a lot of sense. When you enter Egypt, you have to write down what country you're from, what your family name is, what your father's name is, what his father's name is, and how many people you have in your family. And based on that, you come in, you give a sack with money, you get the sack back with food. And people would come and say, I hear the price is such and such, and Yosef would say, yeah, what you heard, that's the price. We don't advertise a cheap price, then you enter the store and it's an expensive price. Yosef ensures that there's fair commerce. And people knew that if they would go out and advertise a false price, Yosef would take them to task over it. Yosef has a tremendous standing army. And so Yosef ensures that every city has at the gates a record, and he goes over the records every night. He wants to ensure that people aren't spying on Egypt, that no one wants to attack Egypt. What he really wants to know is when his brothers will come. And they decide they want to see where Yosef is. So when they enter the city, first of all, they enter through 10 different gates. And they don't want Ayin Hara. They're all exceptionally good-looking people. They're white men in a black country. Remember, they're white from Israel, and everyone else is black, so they're going to stand out. And they're exceptionally good-looking, and they're powerful. So they come down as princes going into Egypt. They go in through 10 different gates. Yosef gets the records that night. He sees the 10 brothers. He notifies in Egypt, close all the shops. All the storage houses are closed but one. And he stands watching that one. For 3 days, he stands watching and his brothers don't show. They're going to all the brothels in town looking for Yosef. Remember, they sold Yosef and they thought he was going to be taken to a brothel. So they're looking through all the brothels in Egypt and they can't find him. Yosef sends out his men, he sends out the soldiers throughout Egypt searching for his brothers. They round them up and they bring them to the palace. Yosef says, gentlemen, I see you're all from one father. How come you walk in through 10 different gates? Now when Yosef appears with them, he has a long beard and he wears his turban so that his eyes are covered. There are only slits, you know, like the Batman, yeah, like the, I don't know what they call that, with the only holes for the eyes. So Yosef shows out, what's that called, that mask? So Yosef shows up before them with this veil with only slits for his eyes. And he talks Egyptian. He has an interpreter in front of him. So he's standing there in all the honor of an Egyptian king. And his 10 brothers bow to him. But that's not a fulfillment of the dream yet, because it's 10, not 11. And they've come for the grains that he dreamed about. But it's 10, not 11. And he says, gentlemen, I see that you guys came here through 10 different gates. You're all the sons of one father. You come from Canaan. What's going on here? Why'd you come in through 10 different gates? You must have come to spy the land. So they say, no, we came to buy food. And Yosef says, no, you came to spy the land. Why'd you enter through 10 different gates? They say, we're all the sons of one man. And they say, look, we were once 12. We're missing a brother. And so we came here looking for him. So he says, that's very interesting. Why were you in the brothels? That's where spies go. That's where you pay money and you get information. Why were you in the brothels? Why were you scouring the city? If you came to buy food, why did you spend 3 days scouring the city and you didn't show up to buy any food? You guys don't seem like brothers to me. You guys are spies. I'm not letting you out of here without your brother. And he throws them into prison for 3 days. Now remember, he was in the pit for 3 days. He throws them into prison for 3 days. And he says, we're going to make a deal here. You guys are going to go back home. and bring me back that little brother you claim you have. And I'm going to interview him, and we're going to check out whether you're telling me the truth or not, because your story doesn't add up. And so on the third day, he comes in and says, here's what we're going to do. I'm scared of God. Remember, Yosef can't lie on that point. I'm scared of Hashem. Et Elokim ani yarei. If you're telling me the truth, I'm taking one brother, putting him in jail. Which brother does he take? Shimon, who pounced on him when he came there. Shimon, who was ready to kill him when he showed up to the brothers. And he puts Shimon in prison and he says, I'm giving you food because maybe you're telling me the truth. I don't want your families to die of hunger. And the brothers turn to one another in Hebrew and they say, it's our fault. Now, Yosef says, I want to understand. If you would have met up, we have 2 minutes. If you would have met up the people who have Yosef, what would you have paid for this brother of yours? They say, any price. And he says, and what if they would have said he's not for sale? What if they would have said, no price, you can't have him? What would you do then? So the brothers say, we would have drawn our swords. We would have taken him regardless. He says, you see you're spies? You see you're not lawful citizens? You're ready to fight wars. For what? You sold him, didn't you? So the brothers turn to one another and they say, it's all our fault. We saw him. He begged us. We wouldn't listen. And that's why Hashem is paying us back now. And here you see how God-fearing the brothers were. They're walking into Egypt and for 10 years, they're eating themselves up inside saying, we did wrong. And now Reuven tells them, but I told you not to hurt the kid. You wouldn't listen to me. Look, now we're paying for his blood. And they don't realize that Yosef understands every word because there's an interpreter in between. So Yosef leaves the room. He can't handle it anymore. He goes to another room and cries. And after he settles down, he comes in and says, fine, you guys, I don't know, maybe you're telling the truth. I'm going to give you food, but Shimon's staying here. And they fill their sacks with food. Remember, people used to give a sack with money. They'd get back food. And he tells them, give them food for the road, aside from the food in their sacks. I don't want them to have to open their sacks and root. And put their money back in the sacks. So now they've been blamed for being spies. And now they're going to be traveling and suddenly find their money. And they see it's Canaanite money. It's their money that's back in the sacks. And they reach their camping ground where they're going to rest for the night. And Levi, who is very pious, he wants to ensure that he tithes his food. He wants to feed his animal who's tired right away. And he opens up his sack and he says, hey guys, my money's here. There's been a mistake and we're in trouble because when we come back, they're going to blame us. So the brothers get all scared and they say, look what God's doing to us. And this is where we'll pick up Thursday night. That's not a shame.